How do I get a hold of you?
You just contact the mayor's office. He has a special signal that shines in the sky. It's in the shape of a giant.
Welcome back to issue 22 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that was chosen amongst all the podcasts in Sector 2814 to instill great fear in its listeners. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. And Richard, you sound like you're in the studio.
Funny that, David. Yes, dear listeners. Those of you who are familiar with the show will know that we normally do this via Skype. Mm. And today we're actually in David's studio.
Yeah, we're together in like in person, even. Yeah.
Gird your loins, David.
It's weird. There's somebody in my studio. Get out.
I'm sorry. Well, there's a cat in here before.
Hey, yeah, well, we've kicked her out, though, because she'll be a bit noisy. Richard, how the hell are you?
I'm incredibly loud and extremely close.
That you are. We're just about rubbing elbows here. All right. So, Richard, what's on the show this week?
Well, in this issue of Behind the Panels, the Akira creator returns to comics. DC's Earth 2 is explored. There'll be a trashy Frankenstein coming up. Marvel's Spider-Men gets some more details and something on Oz Comic-Con. Then it's bats and turtles and film news, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass.
Two.
Even. Part deux.
Part deux. But first, as always, our vintage clip of the week.
In moments, news of the Weird Raider reaches the secret mountain headquarters of the Mighty Teen Titans.
Speedy to Titans! Come in, Teen Titans!
Aqualad here.
Wonder Girl here.
Kid Flash here. What's up, Speedy-O?
Condition red. Rendezvous Sector C for Charlie. Baker beat on the D for double.
Be there in a flash.
Roger.
Welcome.
A short while later, from land, sea, and air, the famed teenage fighters join forces.
Come on, team. We gotta stop this thing.
Slow down, you overgrown, wind-up toy.
Whoa, boy, whoa!
What do we have to do to stop this thing?
Maybe an armor-piercing arrow can do the trick.
Do now? Let it go?
No. We've got to find out where it comes from.
Okay. It's in my element now. Let me handle it.
Check. We'll follow in the copter.
Leaping lionfish. He got me again.
Merciful Venus, look.
Hey, Aqualad's in trouble. Come on. Put this egg beater down. Fast.
Let go of me, you big lug. Let go!
Do you think this boomerang arrow will work, Speedy?
Just hang on to your lariat.
This is where I go to work.
Nice work, team. Now, let's go see who controls this thing.
Oh, man, I could pull about 15 clips out of that thing.
Leaping lizards.
I want nice work, team. And I'm sorry, can anybody take it seriously when he goes, Speedy calling Teen Titans?
All right, Dave, I'm going to have to ask you to...
Just hang on to your lariat.
After that.
Oh, where do you get such wonderful toys?
Well, that one was actually from the Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure in 1967 that had the guest appearance of course, the Teen Titans, which I thought was appropriate for this week's pick.
Absolutely.
That was from an episode called The Monster Machine. What I really want to find, and I couldn't find it, and if anyone has a copy of this, please let us know. It was from the 80s. It was an anti-drug episode with the Teen Titans. It was from the Teen Titans around that era.
So oh, anyone God. Has see, the Speedy become a heroin addict. That's what I
don't know.
Any good yeah, go, just hold on go, to my Speedy kind Teen Titans, man.
Just hold on to your lariat while I use it to find a vein.
Tighter. Oh, dear God. All right, these things that you pull out. Richard, what have you been watching? What have you been watching? What have you been reading this week?
Oh, look, it's been another big week of releases. Of course, we can't go anywhere without talking about Avengers versus X-Men Zero, which was, of course, the biggest, one of the biggest selling issues this week. It sold out.
Well, it's because people were giving away cake.
Yeah, well, is that true? some stores were. Some filled stores in their paperwork, of course. Yeah. X-Men versus, Avengers versus X-Men, which is not a new concept. They did this once before.
It's kind of been rehashed a few times, yeah. I think, over the years. But you know.
But you know, this was issue zero. So this still wasn't the series proper. But
We had words about issue zeros last week, though. I mean, the whole concept. I mean, it's getting to a point where almost every series is almost feeling like an issue zero for another series, including our pick of the week this week, which we'll come back to and we'll talk about as well. So let's try and contain our stories into the books that they're supposed to be in, you know?
And this is what this does. I mean, this is really just setting up the next, I think it's another four issues or something that comes after this.
Is it only a four issues?
Maybe it's more than four issues.
But the question is with Marvel, and this is what they do, how many tie-ins around those four issues?
Look, I'm thinking all the Avengers and all the X-Men titles will probably have some sort of tie-in to
it. And then all the individual books as well.
Yeah, and there's about 40 X-Men and Avengers titles anyway. So, which brings us to, we should mention very quickly that one of our favorite books came out this week, Avenging Spider-Man number 5, which we always love doing. And it's also worth checking out Avengers 24.1, because if you've been wanting to get into the Avengers in time for the movie, issue 24.1 is a good jumping on point.
Well, I'd actually say that this entire, because this Avengers series that is running right now, that's up to 24.1, is actually part of this whole Marvel stealth reboot. It's actually the Avengers that followed, and I kind of figured it out. I was talking to you about this the other day, that it seems that the Marvel stealth reboot kind of is following from Siege. That seems to be where this all has started from. And this is the post-Siege Avengers. So it's kind of a new team, a new group. So if you were jumping onto Avengers at all, you could actually jump on at the beginning of this series, even if you could. But 24.1 is a great starting point.
Yes.
If you can't go back and catch up.
No, absolutely. And this point one thing that that Marvel have been doing have provided some jumping on points. It's a good way of, I think, marketing.
Can I tell you, I hate the point ones as much as I hate zeros, but that's me.
a large number can be intimidating.
Look, from a little, and I use this word, and I know we don't carry an explicit tag, but I got to be careful. But, you know, for the anally retentive people like me who like to catalog everything, point ones are really hard to catalog.
That's true. I mean, look, one of the other big books that came out this week was Daredevil number 10. It's one of our favorite books. Daredevil. We covered that way back in one of our earlier episodes. Look, it's also one of the best covers this month as well. It's got this beautiful cover that looks like it was carved out of wood and then coloured. It's just a really beautiful. The artwork on this is great. It's another Mole Man story.
He is making such a comeback.
Yeah, he is, and he's written completely differently to this, to what he was in. We saw him earlier in the Avenging Spider-Man. And we also saw him in Fantastic Four Year One, written completely differently in all three of them. And I quite like, he's quite desperate in this new issue of Daredevil 10, very frenetic and also almost really tragic figure in this particular issue.
Which is actually the way that he should be written.
Given this particular storyline as well, which goes
Just in general, the fact that he is a guy who is such a recluse that he's managed to go down and make this little world. He's kind of a tragic figure anyway.
Yeah.
And whenever they try and play him up as the evil overlord, it never works.
No, and they really just do him as a desperate guy. It involves a whole lot of dead bodies, which they set up at the end of issue 9. The other Marvel title that came out this week that we read was the end of Nick Fury's Big Week. It was number 8. This is the digital first comic they've been bringing out.
It's the prequel to the Avengers movie. And we're going to be covering that in a future episode coming up, so we won't give too much away. But look, it's an interesting book in the sense that it is quite unabashedly just a prequel. They're not trying for great art here.
No.
And it is literally just telling a backstory. And what I thought was interesting about it is it's a backstory of all of the Marvel films that have come out and trying to tie them all together so that they will go into the Avengers.
Yeah, and it works quite well.
It works okay, and it's actually quite funny in places. And and for those who have been following the movies in particular, lots of little in-jokes and references and stuff, and they're quite like that. And we will talk about it in great detail when we coming back to that one. But I had issues with the ending, but, you know, that's...
What I thought was interesting, yeah, I had issues with the ending as well, but what I thought was interesting was that they really built on the characters of Hawkeye and Black Widow, because obviously they're going to be playing a larger part in, exactly. in the film, and would actually give them a bit more backstory. The one character they didn't use much at all was Maria Hill.
Surprised at, actually.
They're going to be played by Cobie Smulders in the film. I don't think she got any time at all.
Which makes me wonder whether or not she's introduced in the Avengers. So
maybe she'll play a bigger role in the second run of Avengers films. Mm. And my understanding is, I know in the comics at some point she takes over S.H.I.E.L.D. temporarily.
Yeah, well, she does. They oust Nick Fury.
This is during the Civil War.
Civil War siege. Whole era. It's all very messy. It's actually, there's a whole backstory about the fact that Nick Fury actually oversteps his authority and is basically ousted from S.H.I.E.L.D. It actually ties into Luke Cage. It ties into Jessica Jones, who you know I'm a big fan of. It ties into all of that. And it actually played out, some of it played out in, what's Jessica Jones?
It was Alias and the follow-up series.
The Pulse.
The Pulse, of course.
Yeah, it plays up in The Pulse, and it also has its own book. And there's a book all about it called Nick Fury's Secret War.
Right.
And it's a limited miniseries, and that kind of goes into great details as to what it was all about.
Worth checking out. Over on the other side of the fence, of course, DC, New 52, and Vertigo. Won't talk too much about the New 52 this week because we did a lot of that last week. But one new book that came out this week from Vertigo was The New Deadwardians. And this continues Vertigo's trend of zombie vampire alien.
They're obsessed by the undead at the moment.
This is their second zombie book, which is not surprising given how well Walking Dead's doing. But
everybody's trying to catch that flame.
This one's set, as the title would imply, during the Edwardian era. And it sets it up. It's a very British book. And I just want to read out this, a little bit from this one page, because I just love the dialogue here. It's like, George, you're in. I heard you had a spot of bother. Zone B incursion. Everything's dealt with, sir. But my housekeeper was killed. Oh, bloody bad luck.
I seem to have lost my leg.
There's a staffing agency on Newport Road. First class they are. Tell them Chief Superintendent Carter sent you. They'll be very, they'll see to you very well. Thank you, sir. Bloody awful thing to happen. It literally was, sir. pages like that make me really love this book. It hasn't grabbed me the way that a zombie would grab you and bite you lovingly, but it has set up a world that I think is interesting. The chief, the one of the detectives there they're talking to, they don't actually come out and say it, but it's implied that he's a vampire in the first episode. I mean, basically he goes to the dentist and they say, do you need any special dental work? And he goes, no, I had my teeth filed back recently. And the story is actually set up around the idea that it doesn't seem to be anybody normal left in London at all. There's zombie hordes, which they've got cordoned off into like this Area B. And there's a whole bunch of people who are vampires, or they call them the young. And they find a body on the banks of the Thames who was not devoured by a zombie and appears to be a vampire and was not killed in the traditional ways of killing a vampire. And they're thinking, and this guy is actually one of the chief homicide detectives, and who's rapidly finding himself out of a job because no one's dying anymore. but here's a genuine murder's come along, and they have to work out what's going on with that. So I like the premise they've set it up with, but I don't know how much longevity it's going
to
have.
Yeah, it sounds to me like miniseries material.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But of course, quickly mention some of the number sevens that came out this week, because I had a few issues. Aquaman came out this week. Again, look, Geoff Johns doing amazing stuff there. It's still going strong. Really liking the story they're setting up with that. I do like every time Aquaman wanders in to talk to somebody he knows on land, it's drawn with like just a puddle of water around his feet. I just love that. Must be, you know, every time Aquaman visits someone, there must be someone with a mop immediately afterwards. Superman 7 came out this week, and I was a little bit disappointed with it, only because
I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm surprised to hear that.
Only because it's well written and all that sort of stuff. It's just that, to me, I'm starting to get back to that point where it's the things I don't like about Superman, because it's him fighting kind of an alien force again.
Right.
And I like the Clark Kent stories, I think, more than I like the Superman stories.
Probably so you're actually enjoying Action Comics more than Superman.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So it's interesting because it's actually tying it in with an alien story that's running through several of the other books at the moment. So I won't say more than that for people who haven't read it, but it's starting to bring Superman into the rest of the DCU. But with that...
Before we do I just wanted to mention very quickly, it's not actually what we've been reading, but what I've been watching. Because we did it on a previous episode, I thought I would just mention very quickly that I finally polished off the rest of season two of The Walking Dead. And I just wanted to say to the comic book fans out there who have given up on the series because it took such a stray from the comic book series, that the last episode of season two showed us hope. And I think it's very important. I don't want to give any spoilers, but there are a few fanboy moments in it where when you actually watch it and you go, "Ah, oh, thank God. And we're back to where we should be." Now, if they hadn't killed off certain characters and hadn't let other certain characters stay alive, you know what I'm talking about. and so we actually would have had a continuity that would have been more like the comic book. It would have been even better. But they're doing their best to try and bring it back. And there is actually one moment. It's a very brief moment of an introduction of a new character who, for those who have read it, will know what I'm talking about, which is a fanboy moment. They don't actually expand on it, but there's an image in the series where you just sit there and you want to stand up and cheer.
Yeah, look, I'm aware of this, and I think we'll just reference the internet for this one because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Every comic book site has mentioned this. Unfortunately, some of them have done it with like big pictures in the spoiler head, you know, just spoilers before you even get to the headline.
And I don't want to spoil it because I actually knew it was coming, but I didn't know when or where or what was happening. Mm. And when it finally did happen, I wasn't expecting it to be as picture perfect to the comic book as it was.
Yeah.
And it was just, you just sit there and go, that's like a panel from the comic book. And I was very impressed with that. So, so if you have given up on Walking Dead, season three looks like now we've also heard that the governor has been cast as well. And with the stuff that happened at the end of season two, I think we're actually heading for a decent season three. So, I just wanted to really, because I just spent 2 days gorging on Walking Dead trying to catch up. So we'll just throw that out there very quickly. All right. So we have some news, I believe. Yes?
We do.
What a scoop!
Hit me with it, Richard.
Well, this first story is sent to us by our good friend Nima Afshar, who designed the logos on my site, The Real Bits. And he's a huge, huge comics fan as well. But aside from that, he's a huge Japanese comics fan. And he'll be on here eventually when we do the Akira run of
which we episodes. Are coming to, I promise. It's just a marathon run.
It's been bad timing because I'm going away next week. So we're actually sitting in a studio today recording a whole lot of episodes for you. So you won't notice that I'm gone.
Not this one, though. This is this week's episode.
This is
a full episode.
But he sent us in the story because he found it this week on Otaku USA magazine, which is Katsuhiro Otomo, who did the massive, massive Akira series, is working on a new manga.
Oh, bad time.
And this is...
I say about time because, like, you know, Akira wasn't enough.
Some people are still reading it from its original run. but it's going to be a long-form shonen manga.
As opposed to that little short thing, Akira.
Yeah, right? Exactly. shonen manga is the serialized kind of... shonen is basically means boys manga.
Right.
So it's kind of aimed at a younger market. It's a teen market. And it often is those kind of mecha kind of manga or, you know, things like...
What, Japanese comics and mechas? What? No.
It's actually a lot of the shonen stuff is the stuff that we end up getting here because it does appeal to that kind of teen audience kind of thing. It's going to be set in the Meiji era, which is the era, for those of you who are familiar with Japanese history, will know it's the era immediately following the Edo era. But this is actually when Japan was coming out. It's basically 1868 to about 1912. It's an era when Japan's coming out of isolation and slowly becoming modern. So it'll be interesting to see.
So we're talking about the end of the whole. The end of the entire samurai era.
Leading up to the First World War.
Are you actually telling me that we're going to have like mechas and samurais together?
Well, I'm not saying that there's going to be mecha in this, but knowing Otomo, I wouldn't put it past him.
I want to see mecha and samurai together. I think this,
yeah, I think that's, yeah, I'm, look, I'm sure that there's a whole genre that exists for that as well. The next story is an interview over at Comic Book Resources, an excellent website. I'm sure you all know about it. With James Robinson talking about Earth 2.
I'm still worried about this whole Earth 2 thing.
Well, some of this actually quite intrigued me, and what he says here is really interesting, because they asked him that long-time DC readers who love Earth 2 concept, and they're saying, has the storytelling and continuity of the past 50 years been erased? Which is something that I've often been banging on mm-hmm. about. And he says, quite honestly, this is a return to the old pre-Crisis Earth 2. This is what we had for decades before Crisis on Infinite Earths. Since then, there has been his generational thing with the old Jay Garrick and old Alan Scott and various other characters living on the same world as the main heroes. We're going back to the roots of what it used to be. These heroes are not old anymore. They're in their 20s, age between 21 and 28. So it's kind of like, I guess, we've got the origin of the superheroes on Earth 1, which is what we're seeing now.
We're going to see the origin.
So the same thing's happening on Earth
2. Right, okay.
So what he said is, this series set solely on Earth 2, or we see Earth 1 as well. He said he doesn't want to say too much. But he said that if this book is a big part of the DC world, then yes, that those are some of the things that they've spoken about, you know, crossover. So I wonder if we're going to have another crossover Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Okay, so putting money down now, how long until we have our first Crisis where they go, we have to clean all this up again?
Yeah, well, look, he actually references in here that I think he references other Earths as well. So look, and it has been referenced. Look, again, this series is kind of interesting because it's got Nicola Scott doing some of the artwork, and she's one of ours, I believe. She's an Australian artist who's done well for herself overseas, and there's going to be a lot of ties in with World's Finest, which is Paul Levitz's book, which seems to be spanning multiple worlds as well. Right. So, again, he's not talking too much
World's
about
Finest
that.
World's Finest is the Huntress Power Girl one?
Yes. And he doesn't... He remains mum on whether or not Huntress is still Batman's daughter on this version of Earth-1.
Interesting. All right. Well, I actually hope they return to that, because that would be a nice return. Because I actually
Bruce
used
Wayne's
to like...
Bruce Wayne's daughter, I should say.
Bruce Wayne and Catwoman. Mm. I used to like that Huntress. Yeah. And when they modified Huntress over the last few years to be a mobster's daughter and all this sort of stuff, it's never been quite the same for me.
No, but it's I like this because that was a story they ran with when they did the short-lived Birds of Prey series. Mm. They actually ran with that she was the daughter of Bruce Wayne and Catwoman. Yeah. But they also modified.
But I also like when Huntress was first introduced. I remember when Huntress was first introduced, and she was the daughter of Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne. She was from Earth 2. She had managed to get to Earth 1, and there was always this underlying thing because she never told Bruce Wayne who she was.
No, that's right.
And so there was always this kind of like, I know who you are. You don't know who I am.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. And that's one of the things I really liked about the original Power Girl introduction as well, because the original Power Girl introduction was she was Kara. She was Supergirl from Earth 2 who had come over. And it was like she was already there.
Mm.
So she couldn't. Mm. Like, tell anybody who she really was, you know? And I like that about it. I quite like that element of Earth, too. I quite like the...
And again, this comes back to what we've been worried about, you know, what elements have they dropped and what elements have they kept from the old DCU that we actually really liked.
Yeah.
Peeling through these very quickly, because we're running out of time.
As always.
this next story I found hilarious. It's a book called... it's been described as a spin on the Frankenstein story that's coming out. By artist author Rachel Hope Allison. It's called I'm Not a Plastic Bag. And it seems to be...
I can't believe you said that with a straight face, quite frankly.
And I'm quoting here from the article. We follow different pieces of trash at the beginning of the story and follow them through the wind or the water as they make their way to the ocean. And they swirl around and create the garbage patch, and then it comes alive. It ends up searching for its place in the beauty of nature. Now, this could be a really good book, but I find the concept somewhat hilarious. But it's coming out through, and I'm not sure who's actually publishing this one.
It's got to be Vertigo.
It's Arkea. It's an indie. It's Arkea.
Oh, it's an indie. Okay.
So it's Arkea is putting this one out.
I don't know. Look, just on that premise, I don't know. It's just me. It sounds kind of stupid.
It's like the plastic bag in American Beauty, isn't it? I mean, the artwork's quite beautiful.
The artwork, I'm sure, is beautiful, but how compelling can the story be? How emotionally attached to a plastic bag can we get?
Well, and I think this is what comes down to good writing, so I'm going to wait till we see.
All right, we'll wait. We will wait, and we'll have a look at it when it comes out, and we will pass judgment when we actually read it. How's that sound? Because at the moment, I don't know. It sounds a bit silly to me.
Just a little bit. Now, David,
Where does Frankenstein come into this?
Well, they say it's a Frankenstein. He becomes a monster.
Because the wind blows him and he wraps around somebody's head?
All these bits of trash form together. It becomes sentient, apparently.
Oh, okay, so it becomes like... It's not just trash blowing around.
No. Okay. It becomes something, and he's trying to find his place in the world.
All right.
Now, speaking of trying to find its place in the world, David, Marvel's released some more details on Spider-Man.
You know, I couldn't care less.
Look, all they do, they've got this one image and they keep adding bits to it. The latest image that they've pulled up is of the cover Spider-Man, and it's got, there were just black silhouettes there before of two different Spider-Men. The one that's on there now, a lot of people are speculating, is the Marvel 616 Spider-Man.
Right.
And because of the art, because of the team that's working on that, which is, of course, Brian Michael Bendis.
Oh, what? Brian Michael Bendis is writing?
Art's by Sarah Pacelli, who is the team on Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right.
They're assuming that this is now going to be a crossover between the 616 Spider-Man and the Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm not so sure, thinking that could quite easily be Peter Parker Spider-Man from the Ultimate series, and the blacked out silhouette character could be the current.
Can I just say that I think that if you're going to make a crossover between the Ultimates universe and the normal universe, this is a really bad idea. Yeah. These are two universes that should not mix. Because the whole idea of the Ultimates universe was to create an individual sandboxed world. Oh, pardon me. it's not what you think, people. Get your minds out of the gutter. The idea of the Ultimates was to create a sandbox that they could play in and leave the original universe alone. And to cross these two universes, it's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters.
I was just saying, you don't cross the streams.
You don't cross the streams.
It would be very bad.
Very bad. Important safety tip, all right? So if this is a crossover between proper Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man, I've got to say I see disaster.
Look, my care factor is oblong on this one. Now, quick story. By the time you listen to this, it's probably the Adelaide leg is probably over, but Oz Comic Con kicks off this weekend in Australia, in Adelaide, and there's going to be another bigger one in Melbourne in June, July.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually hope to get down to
down
to Melbourne for that one. In the June, July one, Stan Lee will be in the house. And you may have heard of some of the comics he's created. So we're hoping this weekend in Adelaide.
Speaking of Spider-Man,
yes. And Thor and Fantastic Four and so forth. The ones here.
Isn't it marvelous?
I'll tell you what, David, it's marvelous to see be here in Australia. But this one we've got Sean Astin, Jewel State from Firefly and Stargate Atlantis, Jonathan Frakes from Star Trek, and directing a bunch of other films and.
Star Trek First Contact, Clock Stoppers.
Yes.
Thunderbirds.
Yes.
Yes. And Star Trek Insurrection.
Correct.
I'm just trying to think what else he directed. He directed one other. There's one more film.
Yeah, and it wasn't so good, was it?
No. Well, I don't remember it. So.
Anyway, we know the man. Beard, not beard. He's
Riker.
He's Riker.
Number one.
Bill Farmer is down there. The voice of Goofy.
Oh, right.
Oh, gosh, Mickey. So he's there. Look, you know, there's comic guests as well. Nicholas Scott, who we mentioned before, who's currently doing Birds of Prey, Secret Six. He's done Teen Titans and he's done JSA in the past. They've got people like there's Freddie Williams II, Dave DeVries, David Yarden. There's going to be cosplay stuff, comics, anime. So it's all the stuff you'd get at a Comic Con and a regular convention. There'll be movie stuff. There'll be voice actors. More stuff, G.G. Edgley from Farscape is going
to
be there.
Ben Browder from Farscape. When we get to the Melbourne one, we'll be covering it for both film actually and for panels.
Correct.
And for real bits, because basically, as we said, Comic-Con covers a vast array of stuff.
Yeah.
And so we'll be covering it for all the different various shows for all the different particular reasons.
Correct.
Now, I just thought I'd throw it out there very quickly. We're going to put up a special donations page at Geek Actually, because although we can get accredited and probably get into Comic-Con, it does cost money to fly, it does cost money for hotels, it does cost money to rent cars, blah, blah, blah. So we are going to be taking donations to get us to Comic-Con. It'll be a special donation. It'll only be open for a few weeks, basically, trying to get us down there. So if you do have a few spare bucks, even a couple bucks helps us out any way you can.
And we like to think of it this way. If we support things like Oz Comic Con, they'll grow and they'll grow and they'll grow and stuff. And, you know, we'll get bigger guests out here. Ooh. You know, and we really want to get behind this because, you know, Australia needs it. Supernova's been a good comic convention. And
we'll have to get to that, too, by the way.
This year. we'll certainly go to that this year as well. But, we want to support this stuff. So, yes. And we want you to support us supporting this stuff.
Absolutely. So keep an eye. It's not there yet, but it will be up in, within the next few days. By the time you listen to this, it might already be there. We have a special donation thing, which actually has a target. Mm. And we're going to set a goal, and we're going to see if we can reach that goal.
Excellent.
Okay.
Now, I think it's time to move on to some movie news very quickly.
Movie news. I had that ready.
Now, most of this is either Batman or Turtles related, so it's all animals.
Turtles, anyway.
Now, very, very quickly, this has been all over the web. We probably guessed it ages ago. A former Batman cast member will be reprising their role Dark Knight Rises. Yes, David called it ages ago.
I called it. 6 months ago, I called it.
He certainly did. It has been confirmed now. Tune out now if you want this to be completely spoiler-free and come back in about a minute. We'll repeat it again just to mess with you.
Absolutely. By the way, we actually said lately that this show is spoiler ridden.
It's spoiler ridden, but if you really, really, somebody got annoyed seeing this on Twitter earlier in this week, so I just want to throw it out there and just say, look, this is spoiler central. If you really want Dark Knight Rises to be a complete surprise to you,
fast forward 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Right. Liam Neeson has been confirmed to be in The Dark Knight Rises.
All right, so we got the Lazarus Pit is coming
in. And in fact, this has been confirmed by Warner in a press release for Battleship. It says, Neeson next appears in Peter Berg's action of Battleship, and he will also be seen in Christopher Nolan's much-anticipated action thriller.
Boy, could you talk about stuffing up a
The Dark Knight Rises, yeah. Now, maybe they wanted to put that out there. Maybe they just wanted to create a bit of buzz around Battleship, which...
Either that or Nolan is sitting there right now going, what have you done?
But Neeson confirmed that he was on the set, he said, for about, you know, a few hours. He said he doesn't know how significant his role is going to be in the whole film. He doesn't know what context it's in, but he knows that Ra's al Ghul is going to be in Dark Knight Rises, which, as David has just gloated about, I called it. Still,
in fact, but you were the one that put together the ties that you thought it was going to be. Bane was working for him.
I thought either Bane's working for him or it's that whole kind of movement that he wanted to bring.
So it was a combination. We both called it. We saw this coming, though.
Yeah. Right? High fives, David.
High fives. Virtual high fives.
Virtual high fives, because we can't be bothered. Even though we're in the same room, we can't be bothered.
Our hands are literally 6 inches apart. Boy, we're geeks.
Yeah. Still on the Batman. Warner Brothers Animation.
Can I just go back to that for 1 second? Because it just occurred to me that Battleship is actually being produced by Universal. Mm-hmm. And Dark Knight is Warner Brothers. So is this Universal just stuffing sabotaging Warner Brothers? Like, nah. Anyway, sorry.
I was going to say,
Batman.
Batman, yes.
More Batman.
Still on the Batman. Warner Brothers Animation has confirmed that a CGI Beware the Batman will be coming to Cartoon Network.
Oh.
Another Batman series.
But not just that. It's a CGI Batman. Mm. Oh, I mean, look forward to this as much as I look forward to the Green Lantern one.
Yeah, I know. That's going so well at the moment. look, it can be executive produced by Batman Beyond's Glenn Murakami.
Right.
And Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated's Mitch Watson.
Oh, can I see a crossover happening here? Did you ever see the old Scooby-Doo Batman crossover?
Yeah,
we've got that on DVD.
Look, it's going to be, it says here that besides the obscure villains, Batman, Beware the Batman will elevate the once unsung DC Comics heroine Katana to the status of Batman's sidekick. What happened to Robin?
I don't know, but Katana's busy in Birds of Prey at the moment. So.
Yeah, originally created by Mike W. Barr and Jim Aparo, the sword-wielding Tatsu Yamashiro has a comic book history with Batman that goes all the way back to the beloved 1980s series The Outsiders. So she'll be in the series. Look, it's going to debut in 2013 sometime. They've released an image, which is in the link in the show notes we've got there. Look, I'm not... Does nothing for me, really.
No, and look, the CG. Look, I'm a big fan of CG animation, but CG this type of CG animation, as this image showing us right now, is very similar to that Green Lantern. And I really don't like.
I love that Bruce Timm classic because I'm watching Young Justice at the moment, and it's still got that, and it's still they've renewed it for a second season. It's in that same look, and Young Justice has got that Bruce Timm look to it. Mm-hmm. It's classic. It looks awesome. They redesigned those characters that they would appeal to kids.
No, I think this has got, sorry to say it, I think it's got disaster written all over it.
Yeah, look, it's Batman, so it'll get some legs.
Yeah, and I will watch it, but it's I'm not holding out hope.
No. Final story for the day. Look, we've covered this a lot on the Film Actually News podcast. So we thought we'd mention here quickly because Michael Bay, the man Michael Bay, has released another statement, a second statement on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or as David and I have dubbed it, Taint, Teenage Alien
Intergalactic
Ninja Turtles.
Because it taint our mutant turtles, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to see that, and they're like, taint Ninja Turtles for sure. he's so unglamorous. Michael Bay's come out on his forums, and I love this that he still uses forums. Bless him. His Paramount Marketing changed the name. They made the title simple. The characters you all remember are exactly the same. And yes, they still act like teenagers. Everything you remember, why you like the characters, is in the movie. The script is being developed by two very smart writers. Must be smarter than you, Michael. With one of the original creators of Ninja Turtles. They care, capital letters, very much about making this film for the fans. Everyone on this team cares about the fans. Just give them a chance. Jonathan is the director. That's Jonathan Liebsman. Who directed Wrath of the Titans, which is out this week around the world.
We'll be talking about it on film, actually.
Yeah. Is a major fan of the whole franchise. More capital letters. He's not going to let you down, Michael.
Blow it out your ass.
Exactly.
Yeah, sorry. Duke Nukem had to step in there because I don't trust a word that comes out of Michael Bay's mouth at this point. He's everything he has said about every one of his films in the last 10 years has basically been fabricated in some way, considering the fact that he said that the racist robots, Mudflaps and what's his name, would not be in Transformers 3 in any way, shape, or form. And then there was actually behind-the-scenes footage that showed them on set. So stuff was shot with them, and he dropped it because, obviously, of controversy. So he's lying.
I just wish someone would run up to Michael Bay at one point and just say,
"Stop, you fool!"
So Turtles fans,
just hang on to your lariat!
Right. We've gone on long enough with news. It's time to move on to our Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And it should have been funnier.
It should have been.
It should have been funnier, and it wasn't as fun as I was hoping it would be. Our pick of the week this week is Mark Millar and John Romita Jr.'s long-awaited Kick-Ass 2. Now, this was the big promise, the big follow-up to Kick-Ass. This is the follow-up to the comic book, not necessarily the movie.
Which did change the ending.
And it finally came out, and it was so weird, because when it first came out, they said it was going to be 6 issues, and then suddenly it became a 7 issue series, so makes me wonder if stuff was changed or if stuff was added to at the last minute, or I'm not sure. You can never tell with Mark Millar how he works.
No,
he's got a strange working style. Also got to say, John Romita's artwork has become even more exaggerated than in the first one, and I actually didn't like the artwork very much.
Not a big fan.
I like the artwork in the first one. I didn't like it so much in this one.
I used to like John Romita's art a lot. This is John Romita. His junior, I should say.
His Spider-Man runs back in the early 90s, late 80s. Amazing. Was fantastic. I mean, he was really good. He'll never be, this is going to sound very controversial, but he'll never really be a patch on his father. John Romita Sr. was a brilliant cartoon
artist. Oh, he was marvelous, David.
Marvelous. He was a magnificent cartoon artist. And Romita Jr. has done some really, really good work. Don't let me say otherwise. But Kick-Ass 2 is not a fine example of his work. Now, the story picks up, it's a couple years later, yeah?
I don't know if it's actually quite that long.
Because she's older.
She's definitely older.
What's her name? Hit Girl is definitely older. Now, the story picks up basically in a world where, you know, it's the world that we left off with in Kick-Ass. Mindy is now in school, and she's forbidden from being a crime fighter.
With her foster family.
And we still have, I always forget his name.
Dave.
Dave, thank you. How can I forget that? Dave is out still trying to do stuff because he just can't give it up. What we do introduce in Kick-Ass 2 is we introduce the concept that there are other wannabe heroes out there. And he basically is hooked up with a Justice League wannabe crowd in the first couple of issues. Richard, what were your overall impressions of this book?
Disappointment, I think, is probably the overall feeling there. I really liked the original series, and I liked it more than the film. The film was underrated, I felt.
I liked the film a lot.
Because I think a lot of people didn't get what it was doing, and Scott Pilgrim came out after that, is that right? Scott Pilgrim kind of didn't get an audience either, but it was that exaggerated thing that a lot of the sort of the hipsters, you know, sort of latched onto.
Well, Kick-Ass got a bigger audience than Scott Pilgrim.
It certainly did. Yeah. But it's that kind of thing, and I just don't think that kind of the over-the-top comic stuff played as well with a cinema audience as the really dark.
And I gotta say, I read...
We have to take our comics very seriously.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I actually read Kick-Ass literally about a week to 2 weeks before the movie came out. And I remember reading the book, and I was already kind of excited for the movie because I liked the trailer, and I liked the stuff in the trailer. I thought the idea of her being this kick-ass
killer. We can't say the line on this show.
No.
But there's this one line the Hit Girl has at the end of an issue in the original series. Which they kind of try and replicate in Kick-Ass 2, which they don't succeed as well with that. But that line, and when it's in the film too, that caused a lot of controversy because it was a 12-year-old saying it. But that was just cool. Like, I mean, that whole concept.
The whole concept of having this 12-year-old who could kick serious butt, you know what I mean?
Or Kick-Ass.
Or Kick-Ass, as the case might be. And when you actually read, I've got a book in the other room, we actually reviewed it on the site as well. It's The Art of Kick-Ass, and basically it talks about the making of the film. And Mark Millar actually says that the original concept for Kick-Ass was a Hit Girl book. I mean, the whole idea was to do this Hit Girl and Her Father book, but he couldn't make it work, and he couldn't get the story to gel together and blah, blah, blah. So he put it aside and then started working on this Kick-Ass book and realized that there was a place in the book for Hit Girl and the father, and that's how they came into the book. And so you look at it and go, yeah, and that's really interesting to see that put together that way. The problem I found was that I think Kick-Ass is one of those situations, like we've had so many times in the past, where it's a great one-off book, and one of the things that makes Kick-Ass work so well is it's so novel.
Yeah, the idea of... it was funny, because at the time... Nima, who we mentioned earlier, and I were trying to write something. We were intrigued with the idea of comic book characters in the real world.
Yeah.
And then someone turned around to him and said, you know this is being done right now, don't you? And Kick-Ass, you should check it out, which is when I first started reading Kick-Ass, and then it was finished by the time the movie came out. And that concept has always stuck with me, that idea that what would actually happen if you strapped on... a uniform, right,
his friends says in the movie, you'd have your ass kicked, you know.
And he does, you know, and his first, you know, patrol is a disaster. Yeah. He ends up in the hospital for months, you know, and that's, you know, this is in the first book. And then this now sort of picks up, you know, he's had his big victory against the mob. What now? And it's kind of like, to me, this book escalates it, and it starts to go into territory, and even though they keep trying to ground it, it starts to go into regular comic book territory.
Yes.
You know?
And because we've lost the novelty value of it now, it doesn't even, as I was saying, it seems to be lacking a sense of humor because it's no longer almost a parody of comic books, which is what Kick-Ass almost... Kick-Ass 1 is like a parody of comic books that has something to say about the entire comic book genre. Yeah, and it bends it and twists it and turns it on its head. And it's actually probably more clever than Mark Millar even intended it to be. You know, I think he fluked out with making this thing that was such a statement about the whole comics industry, really, at that point. And I don't even think he intended that. I think it's just kind of the way it developed.
I think it was partly intentional, but he is maybe too conscious of that fact in the second book.
And that's the problem. Is the fact he's gone, oh, that's what we need to do for the second book. And he's purposely gone out to try and create this. And it sounds really weird. He's purposely gone out to make a genre-bending statement about comic books, blah, 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 and about this. And there's all these in-references to comic books today and blah. And the problem is that all falls flat. That all falls flat now.
You look at some of the other stuff that he's doing at the moment now, Super Crooks, which has just started.
Great, I read it. I really liked it.
It rips long because it's fun.
Yeah.
And he's got this, and that's got a lot of humor in it. Again, it's also dissecting comic books at the moment, the whole idea of, let's get out of the big city because
and that's Mark where the Millar is best when he's turning things on their head. Absolutely. That's what he. Yeah. I mean, Wanted was another one where it was an unexpected title. Forget the film. We're not talking about the film at this point. Just the book itself is a very different book.
And of course, the Ultimates.
And then there's the Ultimates, and the one you haven't read yet, which is Nemesis, which basically said, let's do a limited series where we say the entire book is from the perspective of the supervillain and basically flip it around and say, here we have an unstoppable supervillain and how does the world deal with that? No superheroes to take him on.
Mm.
It's just a supervillain and the police trying to stop him, you know? And you sit there and go, that's a really interesting idea because we always see the Superman show up and then he has his nemesis. What if the nemesis existed but there was no superhero?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's a really interesting concept. And when Millar is doing that sort of stuff, he's absolutely unstoppable. I think Kick-Ass 2 was a misguided effort. I think it was a book that he didn't need to revisit.
No, and it's interesting you mentioned the whole idea of him trying to having that concept of Hit Girl and then trying to, you know, fit her in, and he found a place for her in the original Kick-Ass, which is it fits perfectly. It is a good dynamic there because here we got this slightly older kid who can't do what he has to do. We've got this much younger girl who just does it instinctively. That's a really great dynamic. When you move that to the second one and they're both a little older, one, the dynamic doesn't work as well. Two, he's found a place for Hit Girl conceptually, and we know now actually there's going to be another Hit Girl series. And ultimately, and you said this to me before the show, David, that this series feels like a setup.
Yeah, it feels like, as we've talked about on the show for the last 2 weeks, it feels like a Zero comic. It feels like this is the ad for the book he actually wants to write.
This isn't Kick-Ass 2, this is Kick-Ass 1.5.
1.5. This is Kick-Ass with the subtitle, The Return of Hit Girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what it really is.
Because most of this series, we should point out, for most of this, the seven-issue series, Hit Girl can't be Hit Girl. She's promised her foster parents that she's not going to do that again.
So she's watching the events unfold on TV and, you know.
There are some really hilarious moments, though, in that, where she's got, like, her foster father finds, like, under the floorboard, she's got this cache of weapons. she's got, you know, she's training stuff. She's going and having boxing, you know, training with Kick-Ass every day. And he's kind of, like, he's pretty, you know, blasé about it. He's kind of, like, you know, if your mother finds out, she'd be devastated. So I'm going to clean up all the weapons, you know. So stuff like that works really well. But and there is a really nice moment, and I liked it when a rather horrific thing. And again, spoilers.
Do a book club properly, we have to be able to talk spoilers. About the stuff.
Again, spoilers. One of the characters is one of this sort of wannabe Justice League. Is killed in a really grisly way in that this sees the return of Red Mist.
Who's now got a different
name. He's got a different name, which we can't say on the show.
Because once again, we don't carry an explicit tag. But this book has got the same. It takes the language quotient of the first Kick-Ass and just throws it up.
And that seemed conscious to me as well.
It does. And that's the thing. Same with the violence. The fact that when and once again, spoilers, but when Kick-Ass's girlfriend gets raped, once again, felt like, oh, what would be really shocking? This would be shocking.
To be fair, it wasn't his girlfriend. It was the girl who, in the comic, rejected him at the end of the first series, which I thought was because
Let's say it's the girl that he's got the massive crush on.
This is one of the things. This is one of the differences between the original comic and the film. Those of you who've seen the film but not maybe read the original comic, he pretends that he's gay throughout most of the thing. Well, at least, you know, doesn't correct her when she assumes as much.
And he does it in the movie as well. It's short-lived.
In the movie, she finds out he's Kick-Ass and it's all forgiven and they kind of have a bit of fun with that. In the comic, rather realistically, he reveals that he's been lying to her the whole time and she tells him where to go.
Yeah.
which I think was a perfect ending because this kid can't take a break.
No, and Dave is the ultimate loser.
He's the ultimate loser. He beats the mafia, but he still doesn't get the girl. You know, in this series, though, you know, even after all this, it's just like his wannabe girlfriend's raped and brutally beaten by Red Mist and his new crew.
Gang,
They also corner one of Kick-Ass's new gang and not only decapitate him, but decapitate the dog and replace his head with the dog's head, which I thought was just one of those moments which was like to shock you. It was the moment where it did result in a really nice thing, which I was building up to before, which was in that moment where Hit Girl's standing in front of the television, stock still resolving, this is where it changes. This is where we have to do something. But it still takes another issue or so before she does
it. And it's really, for me, this entire series kind of meandered along for five issues until she finally donned her costume.
This was a four-issue comic stretched out to seven.
Absolutely. And when she finally dons her costume and basically says she's going to basically take to the streets again and help him out, the comic book does take a turn.
Yeah,
and
rips along.
And at that point, you sit there and go, right on, we're back.
That's the comic I wanted to read.
And that's the comic I wanted to read. And she's awesome, as always. I mean, the character of Hit Girl is a brilliant character.
Now, don't get us wrong. This is not because we just like the awesome violence for Hit Girl. That's not what we wanted, but it just seemed that there were pacing issues.
Well, yeah, because the entire first five issues of this seven-issue arc, he's having this knot kicked out of him, and he's losing.
Yeah.
All the way through it, he's losing. His team is being destroyed. Mm. His girlfriend is being raped. He's losing.
Yeah.
And so it's not a satisfying read all the way through, because there's never a win. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not until she finally steps in and you go, and she starts to kick ass, quite literally. And you sit there and go, now we're starting to get a win. You know what I mean? And so it kind of makes you realize that the entire dynamic of this book, and this is from that last panel as well, what we were talking about being this is a lead into her own series. This is the introduction to the Hit Girl series.
Yeah.
So it becomes no longer a kick-ass book. It becomes it's her story.
Mm.
And it's her development into being what she is. And we took way too long to get there.
One of the aspects of this book, though, that I thought was quite interesting was the dynamic between the police, the public, and the wannabe heroes, which is something that I think was worth exploring a little more. It's really only in that issue seven when it's basically a huge showdown between all of Red Mist's people and all of Kick-Ass's people in the streets of New York, which if they filmed this would be magnificent.
Yeah. and way expensive.
But it's kind of like the ultimate battle brawl between, you know, every superhero ever.
Yeah. Well, look, put it this way, it's a gang war in costume.
And it's funny, you've got some cops calling them superheroes and other cops going, what are you, insane?
Yeah.
They're just costumed freaks. And then you've got the members of the public going, they're just causing problems. And other people going, you kidding? These guys just saved us.
Yeah, when the police wouldn't do anything, these guys are
saving us. So it is that kind of birth of the superhero age, if you want to look at it that way. And we keep alluding to it, and we may as well mention it now because we're rapidly running out of time. The final panel is Hit Girl, basically bloody, battered and bruised and bandaged, being led away in cuffs. Saying it's been an honor to serve.
Yeah.
So she's been arrested. So we leave her about to, you know, this is what's she, 12, 13 or something at this point.
Yeah.
Being led away to presumably juvie. She's killed people at this stage,
quite grisly. She's killed people.
And she was already wanted, you know, for a lot of these deaths anyway. So where she goes from there, her foster father is also being about to be indicted as well, because he knew all about these things, and he was a cop, so he was aiding and abetting. So we've kind of really set up, as you said, David, just this what's going to happen next for Hit Girl. So we know there's going to be a sequel.
I was also very curious by the very last panel, because it also says end of book three.
Mm.
And I was trying to figure out what they meant by book three.
Mm.
Kick-Ass is book one, Kick-Ass two. What is book three?
Maybe was there
a book change in here?
Was this? No, I think there might have been. I think there were books within this run.
Okay, is that what it is? Right. But the fact that they've actually said end of book three as well is almost like there's more to come.
Yeah.
There is more to come to this, you know? And so we are now waiting for the Kick-Ass series. And we'll see how long it takes Mark Millar to get around to it, because, you know, he doesn't work incredibly fast.
And he's doing, I think, two other series at the moment.
Yeah. So and he's also off continually promoting the fact that Kick-Ass 2, the movie, is coming. And, of course, there's nothing signed for it. But that's a whole different issue.
Oh, yeah.
Look, overall, I just kind of feel like as a Kick-Ass book, I can take it or leave it. As a Hit Girl book, skip the first five books and go straight into the Hit Girl stuff. And as an introduction to the Hit Girl story, I'm more interested in seeing the Hit Girl story.
Yeah, if you haven't read the first one, read that now.
That's the essential
reading. It's worth reading. Watch the film because it's a good companion. It's got Nicolas Cage in it.
Yeah, and just be aware that the film, when you do go, don't be surprised. The film's ending is actually radically different.
Definitely read the book first.
Yeah, read the book really first. And I was actually, and once again, spoilers for a book that's actually a little bit older, but Kick-Ass 1, I actually was genuinely surprised by the plot twists.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that about the book. And I sat there going, I did not see that coming. In any way, shape, or form, I didn't. There was about three times in that book where I went, I didn't see that coming.
I audibly gasped when I was reading that.
Absolutely. You know. Kick-Ass 2, none of that.
No.
There was never a moment where I sat there and went, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. Everything in it was predictable. You know, the only thing that wasn't predictable about Kick-Ass 2 is it took so goddamn long for her to get into the story.
Yeah. I mean, look, looking at the original series actually ran...
Eight issues,
and it took 2 years to get there.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that we got to the end. Maybe this one was written a little faster, and maybe it suffered
Well, it also feels that way, though, as well. It's a little bit like there's a film from the late 70s, early 80s. You've probably seen it called Koyaanisqatsi.
Mm.
Documentary film. Took 10 years.
Koyaanisqatsi. That's the one.
It took 10 years to shoot that documentary with all of its footage and everything else. And then he churned out the sequel, Powakatsi, in 2 years.
Yeah.
So it just shows you sometimes spending that little bit of time, because Koyaanisqatsi will go down forever as a masterpiece of a film.
It inspired so many other films.
And Powakatsi has been forgotten. You know what I mean? And I think what's going to happen is Kick-Ass will be remembered for years to come as this groundbreaking comic book.
Mm.
Kick-Ass 2 will be forgotten.
Absolutely. And look,
it's disposable.
Yeah, and look, I'll check out Hit Girl when it comes out.
Yeah, me too.
But look, I'm a fan of Miller's work, and there is some good writing in here. There's some really good writing. Just overall, can't help but feeling disappointed.
I agree. I was disappointed. Now, I'm just very stressed, for those who haven't read the book, and if you are going to go see the film of the original Kick-Ass, the reason why the ending is different is not because the filmmakers thought they could do better, which is often the case in these situations. It was the fact that the end of the book hadn't been written yet.
Yeah, no, this was like Miller's current Super Crooks. Mm. He's actually building it with the writers to actually ultimately create a film. And yeah, because the comic was taking longer.
Yeah, and the reason why in the movie Big Daddy looks different to the way he looks in the comic book is because his designs hadn't been done by the time they were
making it. It was introduced much later.
That's right. So they were already designing him for the film. And when the book came out, he looked different because they were obviously on a slightly different path. And they actually talk about this in the thing. Some things in the film actually influenced the comic book. Some things in the comic book influenced the film.
In issue 7 of Kick-Ass 2, there's a huge one-page thing written by Miller who actually talks about the film and stuff like that as well. So check it out.
It's very interesting. The history of the film to comic book version of Kick-Ass 1 is actually a very, very interesting history. But Richard, I think we're going to have to end it there.
That is it for this week. Next week, we'll be looking at the incredibly classic book, Watchmen.
Absolutely.
That'll also be the first of our series of specials we're doing. We won't be doing the news and things like that.
Yeah, they're going to be shorter, more condensed episodes because Richard's not going to be here, but we want to make sure that you still have stuff on a weekly basis.
So we're going to record them in advance, but we won't have things like news because we're doing them in advance. Absolutely.
So they will just be the book club element, the pick of the week element of the show. The reading list is up. You can find the link on both Geek Actually and on The Real Bits. And these episodes will be released in the order of that reading list so that you can still go ahead and read and then listen to them weekly and hear the picks of the week. And Richard will be back in
The start of May. So the issue that's due out on May the 13th will be the next one back in our regular season.
There you go. All right. But so, Richard, have a great time away.
Thank you.
And we'll see you for a proper show in about 5 weeks.
Fantastic. I'll be back here by way of Paris, Barcelona, and London.
I hate you. Richard, where can people find more about you on the internet?
Well, on the internet, they can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELLBITS.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBITS. In the real world, you'll find me in Paris, Barcelona, and London.
And you can find me here in Sydney or on the internet. You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. We also have a Geek Actually at Geek Actually as well, but at David McVeigh is the one I'm on more than I tried. I've been trying to get the at Geek Actually one off the ground.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have to post everything twice. So it's kind of like, I've already got a bigger audience on the at David McVeigh. So I'm just kind of focusing on that one. I think the at Geek Actually one is still around though. So you can do that as well. That's it. I think that's a show. And look, it's an hour. Not like the last two shows, which have been marathons.
Absolutely. Look, also just want to quickly mention, we've had a few bits of feedback on
on our
Facebook page. I won't read them out now because we'll keep this one to under an hour. But Andrew John Todd, thank you for all your comments on the Facebook page.
We might throw this into the next show.
We might throw this into the next show, but just quickly, we mentioned a comic book shop in Melbourne that we couldn't remember the name of. He's put it down. He's told us it was Comics R Us. So there you are. It's on Burke Street in Melbourne.
I don't even know Comics R Us.
And I should know this because I've actually brought with me today a bag that's got Comics R Us written on it. So there you go. So thanks for that, Andrew. And
where can they find that Facebook page?
They can find the Facebook page at facebook.com/behindthepanels.
There you go. Everybody go out there and like it right now.
Please.
Please. We need the numbers. Bring them up.
Tell your friends. Share. Click the share button.
Richard, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you then.
Bye.
With no power comes no responsibility.